challenge, you're then viewed as a, you know, they start to question, well, you know, is this person someone who we can trust? And did that sort of
thing? Oh, sure. Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah.
See, if you, like you say, if we challenge them, of course, at first, you know, I would try to be very careful to have my bases all covered, know what I was talking about, and I could point to this and say, look, it says right here in the Constitution or in our bylaws or our contract, you know. I was very careful about that, and when I first started out, of course, I was just over-exuberant, you know, I was learning. I learned later to be a little more diplomatic, you know, and I learned to play the game, let's put it that way, but I was tagged as a radical. I was called a radical, you know. And in fact, one of the people in our local accused me of being communist too, you know. And I think that was a setup for me because I was giving some of the leadership at that time in the region trouble. I was challenging them, you see. And so I learned, but I was, and there was a time when you know that they used me as a whipping boy because I was outspoken. And I mean to tell you, and I mean talking about a whipping boy, I'm talking about how they had people planted out in the membership audience out there that would challenge me. I want an answer from Betty Murphy over there about grievance so-and-so. Why did you do it? Or why didn't you do it that way? Oh, I want to know why you're taking the thus-and-so position. I mean, they were, you know, you could see they were planted, you know. And I was the whipping boy for a long time.
But when did that begin, Betty?
Oh, Lord, that, 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after the strike, you were obviously more visible and obviously more
yes.
Threat.
Oh yes, definitely.
What were the other roles that women played during the strike period? Do you recall the roles of other women?
Oh my gosh, they played roles from in the assistance program, you know, dealing with these rental people, banks, I mean, it was very, you know, a lot of sharp gals.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the obvious things like they had the babysitting programs and we had a lot of strike picket captains and lieutenants. A lot of women did those things. A lot of them did. You bet. And a lot of clerical work and things that men, you know, don't know much about.
So, but it sounds then like much of the work that the women did was what's considered more traditional female work. Like
not all of it.
Kitchen.
Not all of it. I mean, they did a lot of that, true. But they, a lot of them, we had picket captains and picket lieutenant women. We had women. And I mean, a lot of them were not just young chicks either.
Mm-hmm.
Some were older women. You know,
and
they were fighters.
They
fine. We didn't have any trouble. We were out there for the same reason, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing too, gotta remember this: your picket captains and your lieutenants—they were there all the time. They had to be there all the time. The girls did that kind of work. See,
mm-hmm.
But the guys might go off and get drunk or something. You could rely on those women, boy.
Mm-hmm.
They had their roster of their people, the days they were, and the hours, and everything else, and they knew just which gates and everything else, and I mean, you know, it was a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was another reason why, too. Here again, the fellows knew that the women would assume that responsibility. Really. Really.
Now, were these women who were beginning to come up through the ranks as stewards, or were they just straight rank and file?
Some of them were. Some of them were. We had Lodi Mae Bickerstaff was on the executive board. And some of them on seniority committee. But a lot of them are just rank and filers.
Mm-hmm.
They got out there in that war, and boy, they were ready to fight. They sure were.
And did this seem to open the way for them to move up in the union?
Recognition in the union activities, you bet. They proved themselves. They really did. A lot of them, after that, became, you know, active and held different jobs,
mm-hmm.
and not so much on the bargaining committee executive board, but eventually a lot of shop steward level,
mm-hmm.
and different committee levels.
Mm-hmm.
They became interested in their social functions and things that they were getting involved in, and they thought it was great. They liked dealing with the different social agencies and things. You know, some of the girls thought that was really great, and they wanted to follow through on it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then, too, you know, the UAW was setting up their educational committees, and eventually we had a women's department, you know, and so it was a training program, and we were more or less establishing the rules and regulations for the UAW as to how women operated and the whole thing.
Now,
really.
When was the women's department set up?
I'm trying to remember what year. You know, I was thinking about that a little while ago. I was trying to think, my God, what year was it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Because I know during the war in Michigan there was a women's bureau of the UAW.
Uh-huh.
But that may have been quite local.
Yeah, it could have been, because, see, we didn't even have a women's committee in our local. I'm trying to think of what year that might have been, like late 50s, something like that. Seems to me, Women's Council, which I was a part of too then, Women's Council.
Now, when was it that case occurred that you showed me the
What year was
the
that?
Transcript.
I'm not sure. Wait a second, I'll check it over there.
Can I get a point?
Well, that's all right, honey. No, it's all right. I'm going to start your little machine. I'll take me a second. Okay.
We were still on the strike. We were talking about the role of the women and how it was an opportunity for them to begin to move up into steward positions,
right,
et cetera, as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your, during this time, what was your own life like, your personal life, your social life? Because it was a period of real heavy activity.
Right. Not very much, I can tell you that. It was a very lonely life.
Mm-hmm.
It really was, you know. It was because, you know, I tried to keep, I wanted to have a good reputation. Being a woman, you know, I don't want to say, well, you know, that's just, like they say, there goes a political prostitute. No way. And it was lonely. It was really lonely. I'm not kidding. It probably, you know, I had to go to bed early anyway because I'd have a bright mind the next morning. But it wasn't very good, all that activity. It really wasn't. Especially, you know, of course, I was married to Ernie, and I went through all that and told you how I had to go through the courts and get that all straightened out and everything else. And I was pretty disillusioned with men there for a while. I thought, well, you know, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I continued to run for office,
mm-hmm.
you know, ran for office, and I ran for office of recordings. I was a trustee in the executive board. And
when was the first time what happened after the bargaining committee? What was your next step up?
Well, to me, that was the epitome,
mm-hmm.
negotiations, you know. But they wanted me to, you know, the caucus wanted me to run for another office. So I ran for, I ran for trustee, I believe it was. Trustee. That was the next office I ran for.
When would that have been?
Oh, that had to be like in 1954.
Mm-hmm. And between the strike and that point, you remained on the bargaining
mm-hmm.
committee. Tell me a little bit more about the caucus.
And seniority committee and things. You know, I was chairman of the seniority committee,
mm-hmm.
too.
Oh, so you had stayed on the seniority committee.
Yes, I did. I did, uh-huh. I had a, you know, at that time, you know, for a long time, Sharon, sort of there was, you know, we didn't have enough people to go around, you might say, to serve. So you might have to serve in
mm-hmm.
one or two or three different things, you know, see. And that was my experience.
So you were on the seniority committee the whole time that you were on the bargaining committee, too, because you got on the seniority committee in about 49, it seems.
I think that's right, mm-hmm, about 49. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me more about your caucus, Betty, in those early days, in the early 50s. What was the particular caucus that you were part of, and how did it function? What was your role in it in that early period?
Well, I eventually worked up to I was the secretary of the caucus.
Now,
you know,
does caucus have a name? Very often there were names.
Yeah, we had different names. We had like the Blue Slate Caucus and the New Deal Caucus. Lars, I belonged to the New Deal Caucus.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other?
Oh, there was the Blue Slate Caucus and Frontier Caucus, I believe it was. And there were about four caucuses.
And how would you define the differences between them?
Well, one was very progressive, you know, very liberal progressive, and that was the one that I belonged to. Then we had the old, what we called the Hatchet Gang, you know.
What were they like?
Well, they were vicious politicians. I mean, they were the old, you know, I mean, who believed in violence and whatever to accomplish their end. And they were people who had held office for years, you know, years in other local unions and things like that. Where the one that I belonged to, there were some of the old-timers in there. They're a very fine couple of marvelous people. But I was the up-and-coming, you know, young group, see. So, and I mean, but Hatchet Gang, what they would do, they would, I don't care what office a person would run for, they'd go out and try to wipe them out, knock them out, you know. I mean, they would use slander against them or buy off a vote. You know, so they wouldn't become elected, and they'd do a hatchet job on you. And I learned how important a good caucus is. I learned how to organize. I learned how to build a machine. And I did. I learned how. And I learned how you, for instance, you know, like I say, during the war, when we knew there were communists in there, the way we got rid of them, couldn't put them in jail, but we just outvote them every darn time and drove them out of the local, you see. Mm-hmm. And so we learned to build a big political machine. And that's exactly what I did. And
what were the roles of the women in each of the caucuses?
Well, the roles of the women in the caucus were just like the men as far as that goes. I mean, if you were representative from Building 2, and you were a steward in Building 2, if you were the only person, especially in Building 2, then it would be your responsibility to get one person in each department in that building, you know, that would be answerable to you. And you would get them to go out and do politic and campaign in their little groups, you see. One, like, right down from one in each department, and that person's department would be responsible for a lead man and the crew,
mm-hmm.
everyone, and you'd have to report back.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the caucus meeting, but, no, how about so-and-so now? Sure, how about Building 2 now? What's your report in Building 2?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd say, okay, now, Department so-and-so, I have a little problem getting a leader over there. Not very much people have got much backbone, but there is one person I'm talking to, you know, and you'd make a report.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd also say, okay, now we've got an election coming up in Department so-and-so, and I'll need about $25 for slates, see? And each person belonging to our caucus would pay dues,
mm-hmm.
for political purposes, you see. And that's how you built up your machine.
Now, did most of this occur right around election times?
Oh, no, all year round. I learned that,
mm-hmm.
you see. You become part of that machine, and you learn you have to build from one. As soon as one election's over in that department, you got to keep contributing and build for the next election.
And you say you were secretary of your caucus.
Uh-huh, right.
Were there other women in those kinds of positions in the other caucus?
Oh, yes. One was Lodi May.
Oh, was in another caucus?
Oh, yes.
Which caucus was that?
She belonged to the Hatchet Gang.
Mm-hmm. Because she'd been one of the original leadership.
Yeah.
And how about in the other two? Do you recall women?
Yeah, but they weren't really out there in front. Mm-hmm. You know, they were new people.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Did any of the caucuses, do you feel there was a difference between the caucuses on attitudes towards women?
Yes. Oh, definitely yes. Yes, I did. The old caucus, you know, the Hatchet Gang, they weren't particularly interested in, like, pursuing women's rights and that sort of thing. No way. Whereas the caucus that I belonged to certainly was very definitely interested in, you know, women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying, but we did have a good contract, okay? And we had a provision that if you had seniority, you know, you had the right to apply for that job. However, the old caucus, they weren't too anxious in, for instance, if a woman was bypassed, pursuing a grievance.
Mm-hmm.
Where in our caucus, it just so happened that I happened to take the first grievance to arbitration when I was on the bargaining committee and won it, where they bypassed the woman from B to A, and I won it. And it was you know, but the old Hatchet Gang, they weren't interested in that. They just wanted control. They weren't interested in servicing the people. They just wanted control.
Mm-hmm.
See? And the control was felt clear up to the region. You see, the region wanted the Hatchet Gang because the Hatchet Gang had control of that plant. They had previously had control.
Yeah.
We took that away. We got that squared away after that strike. Well, we showed them, hey, look here, you know, you can do this thing honorably and properly, and the contract applies to all factions, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
I was so absolutely upset when I, like I say, you know, I was upset about a lot of things. That's why I kept running for office. When I became chair of seniority committee, and I saw some of the agreements that were signed by one of the members of the Hatchet Gang withdrawing, taking away seniority rights from women and things like that, I just come unglued. And, of course, coming unglued was not the answer. The answer was I had to correct that sort of thing. And, unfortunately, some of those things that had already happened, I wasn't able to do anything about. But, boy, let me tell you, I said with procedure ironclad that no agreements were signed by just two people from the seniority committee or one person in the bargaining committee had to be reviewed. Any agreements that would be contrary to the contract would have to first come from the seniority committee with a recommendation why we should agree to this with the company. Then it had to go to the bargaining committee, and they, on their weekly meeting, would review it and decide why and how and what and if, you know. Mm-hmm. Then a report would be made to the membership. It was just disgraceful. Mm. And the way the old hatchet gang, the company would bring somebody back from the Santa Monica plant or Long Beach plant, who had worked maybe in Long Beach, you know, say in the early 40s, but then left them after the war. They, you know, they stayed in Santa Monica because the company wanted them to stay there, mm-hmm. supervisors or whatever. Then they come back to Long Beach, and the company would want the union to restore their seniority because the man lives here now. Hell, they'd get with the hatchet gang, and, you know, the company let them have the run of the plant and a lot of things that they wouldn't permit us to, you know, and they'd agree to it. Sign the thing, the guy has seniority. No one didn't know about it until, like, when I first went on the seniority committee, you know, just as a committeeman, I used to just be in those files all the time. I'd check my tapes, and I'd find something wrong, let's check this out. And the only way you'd find it out is by doing that, because there's a big plan out there. Mm-hmm. And there'd be violations in one building, you wouldn't know about it anyplace else, you know what I mean? It's just buried, see? So we stopped that. Boy, I tell you, we wanted...
So the fight between the caucuses was going on.
Oh, yes.
Almost once the union got in.
Oh, yes.
And when you were in the seniority committee in 49, there was already this problem.
Oh, yes, very definitely.
Now, what happened in the strike in terms of the caucuses?
Well, when we hit the bricks, we all pretty well worked together, you know? There were some people on the committee. I know there was two of the people from the Hatchet Gang that were approving some expenditures, and I was chairman of the finance division there, too. And it came to my attention, and I said, I'm sorry, you know, but this is an illegal authorization. We can't do that for this particular thing they wanted. So they both got mad. They both worked in planning. They both got mad, and they were drawing subsistence, mind you. And it was supposed to be on need, you know, not... Mm-hmm. Not what was due, but on need. Mm-hmm. And these people had a beautiful home and just a man and his wife, and they were top labor grade. So, but they were drawing their checks every damn week, you know, food plus money towards their house payments. They got angry, and they took off, and they went to Detroit with their Cadillac and bought a new Cadillac and come back, and they never did help anymore in the strike. They were just really bad news. Very bad news. And, you know, but then when you put the pressure on people and say, you may or may not do that, you know, then we had one fellow who was one of the goons. His wife was ill, very ill, and under, you know, the doctor's treatment and all that sort of thing. And at that time, cortisone was just being perfected. And we set up accounts at different drugstores and things for prescriptions and that sort of thing. And we set up the account, this one down here in Harm Jones. Mm-hmm. But it was a kind of like a big old-fashioned drugstore, too, you know. And anyway, this one of the fellows, one of the goons, he not only did get the prescription filled, but he also buy liquor. They had the wine and stuff at that time you could buy there, you know. And so they were okaying the vouchers, and I looked at the voucher, and I saw the bill from the pharmacy. I said, we can't do that. And so I told the chairman of the committee, I said, will you please get a hold of him back there and tell him that we can't authorize any more of this. So that night... I had a shot taken at me. He was drunk. So they got a hold of him, got the gun away from me, everything else. But all that happened, I'm leaving for charges against him like that. But they pulled him off the goon squad.
Where were you when you had
him? I was on my way home from the hall. So what happened? You know, that was a bad deal. But you know, somebody had to make decisions. I was making some of the decisions. They weren't all too good. I mean, mm-hmm. they were too happy about it. You know. But anyway, Walter Reuther, he assigned a bodyguard to me then. And, boy, I tell you, that fellow sit right next to my desk, you know. He did, right next to my desk. And, I mean, he was a big old guy. And anybody coming in, they had to knock on the door first, and he'd go to the door, and he'd look at him and frisk him, whatever. And I was in the central room, too. There was offices all around, you know. And then he'd take me right home, you know. And that would be it. I'd be home and everything else. And the next morning, boy, he'd be right there at the door for me. And, you know, my dad never did question that. I thought, boy, you know, strange pop didn't suspect something. If he had known about that, listen, he'd have packed my daughter and I, and he would have gone a long ways away, because he wasn't too happy about this union business anyway, you know.
Now, was that the only sort of incident that
for me
you experienced? Uh-huh.
For me.
And that was internal.
Yes, that was internal, because he had been
pretty long one.
I think you're right.
I felt the first, before I heard the noise, I thought
Did
I
you?
Felt something.
Oh, my. But we did have we did have other incidents that happened during the strike, but not to me personally, you know.
And were most of those internal?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we had some. We had the company goons too during the strike. You know, they would they'd beat up on some of our guys too.
Did you ever have trouble with the company goons?
Did I personally? No, the only trouble I ever had with the company was, even though I was holding a job down and everything else, and I'd still go over, and we were picketing, the IM were on strike then, too, right shortly after we were, and we'd go over and we'd picket for a few hours at night in El Segundo. Mm-hmm. And I was picketing this entry into the plant where the trucks would deliver materials. And, boy, one of them darn near run me down. Man, I'm telling you, good thing I was young because I could get out of the way in a hurry, you know. But I was not walking really slowly, but he was coming down like this, and all of a sudden he put it in gear and picked up speed. And, man, I just barely got out of the way. And they were taking pictures. You know, they took all kinds of movies of all during the strike of all the people mm-hmm. that were on gates and things, you know.
Was that Teamsters? Did the Teamsters cross the line then?
Well, no, it was a scab. Uh-huh. It was a scab, no. No.
Was your line honored by all the unions?
You bet. Uh-huh. Electrical. Now, the electricians union, we gave them special passes to go in because we wanted them to go in for the overhead reason. Then we gave special passes to the telephone operators because we wanted them on the plant. Uh-huh. But no one crossed our picket line unless they had we would issue passes, uh-huh. definitely.
What about the women in clerical positions?
Oh, a lot of them stayed out. Oh, yes. Lots of them stayed out. And a lot of them later came into our bargaining unit. When you read this, mm-hmm. you will find it. There are a lot of, I'm so pleased that I kept this darn thing because the reports in here are very accurate.
Now, the women who were in clerical positions were then organized into
your
unit?
You bet.
Following this strike?
Yes. We also, at that time, we had a materiel group that was clerical who petitioned to withdraw from the union. Mm. We had the painters who had petitioned to withdraw because they weren't happy with the reevaluation we'd made on a job inequity. They wanted more, you know.
Now, Betty, with the caucuses, was there agreement among the caucuses on the bargaining issues?
Oh, never. 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 They politicked the hell out of it. I mean, they politicked it to the last minute before we went back in the plant because they established for the record of what their position on these things. And then they, you know, good or bad, I mean, they'd use it against one another, you see.
Now, what happened when you came up with your final agreement and went to the membership? How long did it take to finally come up with an agreement with the company?
Oh, Well, it took a long time. It took a long time. It took.
You
mean for the final signing of it? Oh, Lord.
Did you have to walk out in January, February, you said?
No, we walked out. We walked out in September of 50.
No, I mean the one.
The Wildcat. Right. Yes. But actually, I guess we really wrapped it up on March the 6th.
Mm-hmm.
We really wrapped it up. March the 6th, and they got retroactive checks and all that sort of thing.
See, it was retroactive to the original walkout date.
Oh, yes. In fact, we got back beyond that. We got back, I had a date written down here. No, to the walkout date. In fact, we wanted to go back further than that because, you see, our contract had expired, but we were working without a contract. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go way back to 50. We wanted to go back to 50, see? But we couldn't quite swing that. Mm-hmm. But our settlement was excellent.
And what was your settlement like compared to what your initial demands were?
Well, we got our settlement we didn't get our bulletin boards without censorship. We did not get the union shop. But the rest of our demands were met.
Mm-hmm.
They were met.
Mm-hmm.
And so severance pay, we did not get severance pay. We did not get severance pay. We had no change on the maintenance of membership or checkoff. That remained mm-hmm. the same. We did get our wage increase, 10% wage increase, and we did get cost of living. You see, and we got retroactive. We ended up with retroactive. I have here from 10-16, but I'm sure it was back to 9-5.
Okay, 10-16 was right before you went back in.
That's right.
Now, what was the membership meeting like when you took your, after the March 6th, and you had your, the company, and you had agreed? What happened at the membership meeting to ratify? How much?
Well, there weren't as many people there as we would expect, you know, for the vote. But they agreed. They agreed to accept. I made a report, a dissenting opinion report, you know, to the membership, because I felt that we could have gotten more.
Mm.
And I made that report. However, I went along with the majority, you know. And there were retroactive checks put out. My gosh, there was the average check, I think, amounted to $300 and some odd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for all fuel workers here, as much as $600.
Mm-hmm.
But the average, I think, around $300.
Now, after the strike, was there any restructuring in the union? Was the negotiating, was the bargaining committee still both negotiating and the bargaining?
At that time, yes. Uh-huh.
Ready for the strike, that structure was maintained.
That was maintained for a while. I can't remember exactly what year it was that they finally, within the UAW, they established two different committees, one negotiating and one grievance procedure,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a ridiculous thing because, you know, in order to know the whole ball of wax, you should be in on both.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a grievance, a violation of the contract, you should know the negotiated part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You should know your negotiations. So, you know, so.
Now then, after.